Here we have this very capitalist culture and country, and we have this incredibly socialist transportation system where the idea of having the private sector build and run a road is just crazy talk. And over in China, where it's an avowedly communist system, the idea of having the private sector build and run a road is like, well, yeah, how else are we going to build all the roads? Adrian Moore. I'm Vice President at Reason Foundation. I'm a transportation economist, and I do a lot of work on urban transportation systems and how to pay for transportation and how to make markets work in transportation. I've been working now for a number of years on a project in China, working with some universities in China as well as one municipal government there on figuring out some ways they can approach their transportation systems that take advantage of pricing and markets, but also builds out the kind of infrastructure they need for the population growth they have. They've got a fair number of cities that are, you know, bigger than any city in the U.S. except for New York. And you've got cities there where they're growing by 100,000 people a month, and they're growing by 10,000 cars a month. Just think about building that many parking spaces to accommodate cars coming into a city at, you know, 120,000, 30,000 a year. The car is, you know, transformative in China because it's such a new phenomenon. It's only in the last, you know, decade that the number of cars in these cities has really taken off and that small business people can pool up enough money to buy one. The Chinese have put a lot of emphasis on building a lot of infrastructure. And in some ways, that's been beneficial to them because it's growth that's driven largely by their human capital. It's their people moving to the cities, being entrepreneurial, in recent decades getting the freedom to pursue their entrepreneurial drives or to go to school as they've ramped up their higher education system. So the human capital has just exploded in China, and that's what's driven their growth. Recognizing that you need a lot of transportation to move the goods and services around for that kind of growth, they've built a lot of infrastructure. So, you know, if the government's going to be responsible for infrastructure, you wouldn't want to short shrift that and hold back your economic growth. The bad side is, of course, that this is a highly authoritarian government, a highly authoritarian society. They've not held back from displacing millions of people in order to build this infrastructure. There's no property rights there, so they've done what they want, when they want, and how they want, which when it works, you know, looks like an economic benefit because you're not counting the cost to all the people who are displaced or pushed aside. And when it doesn't work or when you have problems of corruption, which still, you know, crop up not infrequently in China, there's a lot of resources that get siphoned off or wasted. I don't actually find rush hour in Chinese cities to be that radically different from rush hour in Chicago or Los Angeles. You know, they're wide freeways and they're, you know, wall-to-wall cars going, you know, half a car length at a time. What I experience on the 405 in LA is a lot of what I expect on the Third Ring Road in Beijing whenever I go there. So stop and go congestion is the same no matter what the scenery is like in a sense. In China, the big difference is you see a lot of other people traveling by means other than car still, which you don't see in the U.S. I mean, in the U.S., outside of New York, in cities like Chicago and San Francisco, you still got more than 80% of the people traveling by car. So yeah, you might see the train go by in Chicago or San Francisco or the BART line or whatever, but you don't see a lot of people walking, you don't see a lot of people biking. There is every city in China that you travel through by car, when you're stuck in traffic, you see, yeah, there's a lot of people walking, there's a lot of people biking, there's a lot of people on those buses and trains, they're full. They're not like the empty buses and trains you see in most US cities. So that's the real difference, is there they really do use all the modes of transportation much more so than we do in the U.S. because in the U.S. we're wealthier and everybody has cars. You know, I've always been fascinated by the fact that if you're a poor person in a city in the United States and you do not own a car, you borrow more rides from friends with cars than you ride the transit system, according to national statistics. So you know, it's an interesting system where bumming a ride is a more better system for most people than using the public transit system. In China, it's nothing like that. It's a much more, so many people don't own cars. Cars are so new there. They travel by other means and they just take it as a matter of course. Transportation planners in the US, you know, think we, a lot more of us should be walking and biking and so forth. They're always making this argument that we should get out of our cars. And I say, you know, everywhere I go in the world where that's actually occurring, all those people are trying to get into cars. You know? And that's not just China, that's Europe, that's Asia, that's everywhere. Now, as the Chinese cities are getting congested, as the number of cars in these cities is exceeding the capacity of the road system that they built, even with all the new roads they have built and all the new roads they are building, the government's wrestling with how do we deal with this congestion? And they're not willing to trade off their growth in that industry in order to reduce congestion. They're experimenting with congestion pricing. They're looking at how do they build better systems to manage their transportation networks, using a lot of new technology, adopting new technologies much faster than we do in the U.S. And, you know, they're more willing to keep building as they grow. You know, in the U.S., we've almost stopped building urban transportation infrastructure, or at least automobile infrastructure, even though the number of automobiles and the distance people are driving and the number of people driving them keep going up. So we're cramming more and more into the same size bag. They're cramming more and more into the same size bag, but they're recognizing they got to get a bigger bag. As they're building out their interstate highway system, which they're in the early stages of building that national interstate highway network, they are planning to make an awful lot of it toll roads because that's the only way they can combine. I mean, they need that sort of revenue to build the things in the first place. And in the second place, if they don't have tolls on them, they'll just get congested. So they want to use pricing, you know, scientifically in a sense to figure out, you know, if the price gets too high, we have to build more road. In the U.S., we much more have the attitude, at least at the local level, that transportation's a problem. And if people moved less, we'd have less of a problem. And so we're not trying to figure out how do we make our transportation system better in our cities so we can be more economically competitive. In China, they're constantly thinking about how do we make the transportation system in our town work better so we can be more economically competitive. The idea that infrastructure is important to our economy and that infrastructure investments can have a positive effect on getting out of a recession makes sense. The question is, where does that come from and what drives it? Having the central government try to pump more, you know, money distributed through political systems is not the right way to do it. If we, you know, borrow a lot of money from the future to pay for building a lot of infrastructure now, that will help us get out of the recession, which I think is the wrong-headed way. Stimulus hasn't worked, it doesn't work. Borrowing just means that when we do get out of the recession, there'll be less money then to spend then because we've already borrowed it all. So it flattens out our climb out of the recession for the foreseeable future. It's a terrible way to approach things. Having local projects that can be done, you know, executed by folks who are willing to pay for it, and most importantly, I think, recognizing there's a lot of private money willing to invest in roads where people are willing to pay to use those roads. And I should say, somewhat the same at a lesser extent for transit systems. If there are bus lines and projects out there on public transit where enough people are willing to pay for it, where you might be able to get private capital to invest to build that thing. But it's overwhelmingly true for a whole number of projects on the roadside. And we're still stuck in this sort of, you know, here we have this very capitalist culture and country, and we have this incredibly socialist transportation system where the idea of having the private sector build and run a road is just crazy talk. And over in China, where it's an avowedly communist system, the idea of having the private sector build and run a road is like, well, yeah, how else are we going to build all the roads? You know, so how crazy is it that we're that backwards in the U.S. that we can just barely wrap our brains around the concept of the private sector building a doggone road? So we've got to overcome that. We've got to embrace that to build the transportation system we need to get everybody where they want to go, especially think 20 years from now. So we better have a lot more transportation by then, or we're all just going to be staying home.